From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. As Washington debates wholesale reform of its intelligence gathering agencies, the knives are out at the CIA this week. Former Republican Congressman and Bush appointee Porter Goss has moved in as chief with an apparent White House sanction to clean house at the CIA. Agency veterans say a political purge is underway, not for the sake of better intelligence, but to sideline agents believed disloyal to the president and his particular view of the world. In the midst of war in Iraq, war on terror, and threats to the nation, the talk is of shakeup, meltdown, and rebellion at the CIA. Tonight on Point, the uproar in America's top spy agency. You can join the conversation. Who do you believe in this war of spies and masters? The veteran CIA officers who are howling about a political purge, or Bush administration appointee Porter Goss, who's charged with restoring the credibility of America's Central Intelligence Agency? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is John Diamond. He covers intelligence for USA Today. John, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here, Tom.
So it's incredibly hot language out of Washington this week. The Weekly Standard writing about a full-blown war between the Bush administration and the CIA. What's going on there, John?
Well, as one intelligence official put it, who I spoke to this week, quipping on the tremendous earthquake going on out there, that the beatings will stop when morale improves, and use that phrase to describe what's going on. It's highly unusual. The White House spin is that every new executive in a major government organization has a right to and can be expected to replace top officials, and that this is normal. But veteran CIA officials who I've spoken to have said they've never seen anything like this. The closest they can see to this is when Admiral Stansfield Turner came in under President Carter in the mid-70s after some very damaging revelations about the CIA. And one official put it, the admiral came to the agency with a boarding party with sabers drawn, and cut out a lot of people at that time. But folks who've been around a long time say this is the worst they've seen it.
And this time may be different from Stanfield Turner's times, and he's been with us on Point, and of course still speaking out on intelligence issues in the U.S. This time the charge of a big political agenda beyond merely having an effective intelligence gathering apparatus is in play. John Diamond, explain for us who came in with Porter Goss, why that's creating so much trouble inside the CIA, and who's left already and who may still go.
It's been fascinating and somewhat unexpected, because Goss himself is a veteran of the CIA, a covert operator himself in the 1960s. As the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, was thought of as somewhat of a cheerleader or, you know, a booster of the CIA.
Yeah, though he did call it dysfunctional at the same time.
Then this summer, he came out with a very sharply worded report that focused especially on the Directorate of Operations, the DO, which is the elite clandestine service that does the human intelligence spying, the recruiting of foreign agents, called that dysfunctional, said it was in need of a major shakeup. And indeed, the human intelligence side of the CIA has been widely criticized, both for the pre-9/11 failings to penetrate al-Qaeda and for the failure to penetrate Saddam Hussein's regime in Iraq. So there was legitimate criticism aimed at poor human intelligence, but the report was particularly sharply worded. Goss then comes in as the director of Central Intelligence in September, and brings with him staffers from the House Intelligence Committee, some of them who had short stints at the agency themselves some years ago and apparently had not made friends during that time, and others, particularly Pat Murray, who is Goss's chief of staff, who was most instrumental in the writing of that very critical report. And we're told there started to be immediate personality clashes between especially Murray and the officials at the Directorate of Operations.
And, of course, we've had departures there just in the last few days, some very high-level resignations.
Yes. Earlier this week on Monday, Stephen Cappies, who is he's called the DDO, the Deputy Director of Operations, which essentially means he's the head of the Director of Operations, the head spy at the CIA, mm-hmm. the head of the clandestine service. His deputy, Michael Sulik, also departed. Previous Friday, John McLaughlin, the deputy head of Central Intelligence, retired. Michael Schur, now known as the anonymous author of Imperial Hubris, a book that was sharply critical of the Bush administration's handling of the war on terror, left last week. In September, a fellow named A.B. Buzzy Krongard, the number three official under George Tenet, was essentially retired from the CIA. So several top officials, and we're told, according to a memo sent to agency officials by Porter Goss, that there will be more, that there are more personnel changes to come. So he's bracing his agency, put out an email saying, I will announce a series of changes, some involving procedures, organization, senior personnel, and areas of focus for our action. So he's bracing them for more.
When he says more, of course, all those you listed resigned on their own volition. Is he describing more resignations in protest to his management or him bringing the axe down on some?
I read his message as saying that he will make changes. But we're also at the same time hearing rumors that there will be other departures of people who are leaving, not because Porter Goss told them to leave, but because they're unhappy with what's happening. We'll have to wait and see, obviously, whether that actually transpires.
Now, John Diamond, these CIA people who are leaving, and there's different degrees of kind of fire and anger about these departures. Certainly the two this week, very angry, it would appear. They're not saying these are just personality clashes. The charge coming out through lots of leaks, I must say, to the press lately, is of a political purge underway in the CIA. Is that seen as having credibility, or is this sour grapes by guys who didn't do their job and now the pressure's on, they don't like it?
Well, tough to draw the line in such a secret world. The charges of politics are going both ways. But I can tell you this, that several veteran intelligence officials as well as lawmakers who I have come to trust say that these two, Cappies and Sulik, were highly regarded professionals with many, many years of experience at a time when the agency is desperate for experience in the human intelligence field. They're bringing in people back from retirement to come into the Directorate of Operations, get back to work, because they're trying to expand it rapidly to deal with this vastly different threat, the global war on terrorism, compared to what we had during the Cold War. So there's a view that this is throwing valuable experience out the door, if you will. At the same time, and from the other side, there is the view that, hey, there have been some major intelligence failures, and up till now, nobody's been called to account for it. You know, I would point out that George Tenet has left as director, and the previous head of the Directorate of Operations, James Pavitt, has also left. So there have been departures before these two. But anyway, the argument is, the argument sort of coming from the White House or Porter Goss side of this equation is that, you know, it's time for a shakeup. The agency needs change. And some people need to be held accountable for the lapses of the past.
John Diamond, stand by. I want to get some ex-CIA voices into this conversation. We're joined from Washington tonight by Vincent Canestraro. He's former CIA counterterrorism chief, former member of the National Security Council under Ronald Reagan. Vincent Canestraro, welcome to On Point. Good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
And from Providence, Rhode Island, we're joined tonight by Lee Strickland, a former CIA analyst, served for 30 years as an intelligence officer, a member of the Senior Intelligence Service. He's now director of the Center for Information Policy at the University of Maryland. Lee Strickland, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Vince Canestraro, to you first. What is going on at the CIA? How do you interpret what's happening there?
Well, I think there are a couple of things happening. One, when Porter Goss was sent out there, he was basically given some instructions to get the place under control. The administration had been embarrassed by a series of leaks prior to the election that derived from the agency and that call into question some of the policies that the Bush administration had adopted, some of the views that they had expressed.
And leaks that appeared to be deliberate and aimed at the Bush's reelection effort to some extent, perhaps.
Well, that was certainly the charge. Whether that's true or not is a different question. Mm. But one example I can give you is Vice President Cheney had asked for the agency to do an assessment of whether or not there had been a material relationship between Saddam Hussein and Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, mm-hmm. the Jordanian terrorist,
yeah.
Who has been in Iraq and is causing a lot of problems. The agency sent a briefer out to the vice president's residence and gave him the results, saying, no, we don't find any evidence that there was a relationship. The vice president was very angry at that because it was an assumption that he had made,
right.
as he has made previous assumptions about a linkage between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. But that angered him. But what angered him even more was later that story about the briefing leaked to the press, obviously from the agency, and that drove him around the bend because he felt this was sabotage of the administration, an attempt to get John Kerry elected.
So
it was those kinds of things that played a part in the instructions to Goss. Now, having said that, there were reasons to have professional changes out at the agency. John Diamond mentioned that there were a number of intelligence failures.
Mm.
But some of the people responsible for them, who've been written up in the Inspector General's report, have already left the agency. A few remain, but they were more junior. The people who just left, Steve Kappas and Mike Zulik,
yeah.
were not charged with any intelligence shortfalls. They've only been there for about 3 months. And Steve Kappas, in particular, is highly regarded.
Arab. And he wasn't fired. He left. He left in protest.
He left in protest because the Goss team had made these managerial changes in a very inelegant way. In other words, they wielded a meat cleaver rather than pruning shears in accomplishing some things which are necessary.
Lee Strickland, what's your interpretation of what these resigning CIA officials are protesting? What are they upset about?
Well, I think Vince has it entirely right. This is all about change management, and while corrections are needed, I mean, we know that from the 9/11 Commission. There's a number of things that we need to do better, you know, revitalizing intelligence warning. But, you know, change management is all about a number of items, you know, competence in the discipline, discretion, clarity in communicating the new vision. And all of these things are absent in this political climate where we brought people in from the Hill with very little expertise, and we are losing what I call the best and the brightest.
But you've made a much bigger charge than simply inept change management. You've written, Lee Strickland, that the recent tumult at the CIA should terrify the nation. You say it's the politicization of intelligence, the most severe threat to our homeland security and our democratic system.
Exactly. I mean, that was my fear with Mr. Goss's nomination, that he was not going to bring the independence and the discretion that's necessary for this vital job. I mean, you know, we've had times in the past where there has been very critical need for change. You know, Kennedy at the time of the Bay of Pigs. He turned to John McCone, who was a man of vision, maturity, wisdom, problem-solving ability. This is the kind of change that we need to bring in there, not politicians who, as Vince very eloquently mentioned, come in with a meat cleaver and lose the competence that we need. When John McLaughlin, who I've known for years, leaves, when the DDO and the ADDO leave, and these were men of high stature, this should really be, in my view, terrifying for America because we're losing the very people we need to lead the agency.
And Vince Canestraro, we just got a minute before the break, but this charge that the agency is being politicized, that Porter Goss is looking as much for loyalty as for high intelligence skills.
Well,
what do you say to that?
I think the administration has charged him with getting it under control and making it loyal. I think what Lee has said, though, is very apt. In losing these people and demoralizing the middle ranks, you're demoralizing kind of the first line of defense against terrorist events. Intelligence is the first line of defense, and if you're letting your guard down and weakening your resources to meet those terrorist threats in the short term at least, then we're putting ourselves in a very dangerous position, and that's what I'm concerned about.
We've got a lot to talk about here. John Diamond, stick with us. Vincent Canestraro, Lee Strickland. We're talking tonight about the shakeup, the meltdown at the CIA. George Bush's man, Porter Goss, is in, and CI vets are jumping out the windows. You can join us tonight. Who are you sympathetic to in this war of spooks? Porter Goss, whose backers say he has to clean George Bush's opponents out of the CIA, or the CIA career officers who say their agency and American intelligence is being blatantly politicized? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the shakeup, the meltdown, the turmoil at the CIA. My guest tonight, John Diamond, covers intelligence for USA Today. Vincent Canestraro is with us, former CIA counterterrorism chief. And Lee Strickland, 30-year veteran of the CIA, now director of the Center for Information Policy at the University of Maryland. You can join us as well. Is the Bush administration punishing the CIA rank and file for not saluting White House claims on Iraq? Or is a dysfunctional agency getting just the clock cleaning here that it deserves? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Edward is calling from Chicago. Hi, Edward. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good. What's on your mind?
I just want to put my vote in. I'm on the side of the renegades. And I think when you see Connie Rice, who ignored the warnings of the CIA that Al-Qaeda was going to strike the United States, and she's becoming Secretary of State, it's quite obvious that the Bush administration rewards loyalty over competence. And furthermore, I'd like to state that I don't believe in the war on terror. I think it's all a ruse. I think our voting system has been corrupted. I think that the Bush administration is the greatest threat to our democracy.
So you're a skeptic right up and down the line, but lining up with the discontented ones at the CIA. Edward, thanks for your call from Chicago. John Diamond, what is Capitol Hill saying about this? Congress has oversight responsibility here. What are you hearing?
Breaking down sharply on partisan lines, which is, I'm sure, a pattern we're going to see in virtually every critical issue that comes to the Hill this year. The Democrats are saying that this is potentially dangerous for national security. The argument is that this is an administration, essentially, that on foreign policy knows what it wants to do, has a very specific and quite aggressive agenda, and will pursue that agenda, and it wants to avoid the embarrassment of being shown to be overriding or overruling its intelligence officials who are reporting dangers coming from that particular course of action. Example would be the pre-war reports saying that there could be a very difficult and painful insurgency issue in Iraq after the collapse of Saddam's regime. These stories came out during the election season. It was embarrassing to the Bush administration to be shown to have ignored those warnings.
But here we are, so, up to our elbows or higher in that insurgency. It would seem like the country needs honest intelligence.
Well, reality certainly has a way of catching up, doesn't it? But it at least by getting the CIA on board, so the criticism goes, the administration could at least say we are acting in accordance with what our best intelligence is saying we ought to do, which from a sales point of view in terms of a foreign policy is helpful. But yes, reality does catch up, no question.
Vince Canestraro, we've got John McCain, pretty critical of the CIA, saying you've got a rogue agency at work here, also using the dysfunctional word, saying yes, there needs to be a cleanup at the CIA. He's thought to be, known to be, a maverick, not a yes man to the White House.
I think Senator McCain, who is an honorable man, is being very poorly advised by some of his advisors on intelligence, particularly at the American Enterprise Institute, which is a hotbed of neoconservatism. Look, what's happening at the CIA has got to be seen in context. It's not just there, it's at the State Department. What this is a takeover of the entire foreign policy establishment by the hardliners, by the neoconservatives. It probably gives Secretary Rumsfeld the largest voice now. He certainly is backed by Vice President Cheney. And there won't be any dissenting voices anymore. There won't be any caution flags put up by a Secretary of State or by analysts at CIA saying, look, you know, the Sunni triangle doesn't look good. You're probably not going to be able to carry out successful elections in January as you plan. These are things that they don't want to hear, and they probably won't be hearing them. since they've completed basically this takeover.
Vincent Canestraro.
And Tom, a quick example of this, in the defense authorization bill this year, there's a provision that gives the Pentagon a lot more power to do covert operations, the kind of things that traditionally have been the purview of the Directorate of Operations. So now if you've got compliant, much more loyal officials in the Directorate of Operations, you won't be hearing any noise from the CIA over the idea of the Pentagon taking over this function. So that may be another element to the agenda here.
Vince Canestraro, I know we just got you for another minute. A final thought, as John Diamond has pointed out, it doesn't take long for reality to catch up with a country, with an administration in any case.
Right.
So wouldn't, here we are with another 4 years stretching out in front of the Bush administration, wouldn't they need honest intelligence?
Need an independent voice. They need dialogue, but they're not going to get it. Their ambitions, particularly in foreign affairs, are probably not going to be matched by the resources available. But they're not going to know that before they carry them out.
But they're not fools, presumably. So how do you interpret the way they're thinking here?
Well, there is a whole series of miscalculations and misjudgments that came out of the Defense Department that led to the invasion of Iraq, the way the invasion was implemented, and the whole aftermath. That was a whole series of miscalculations. So if they haven't learned those lessons, because there is no purge at the Defense Department, none of those officials are being removed, if they haven't learned that lesson, what lessons are they going to learn from reality? They're going to be faced up with hard facts on the ground, as John points out. But by that time, a great deal of damage will have been done.
Vincent Canestraro, it's always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Vince Canestraro, former CIA counterterrorism chief, former member of the National Security Council under Ronald Reagan. Let's get another call here. Mitch is calling from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Mitch. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd just like to say I always follow Mark Twain's maxim, history never repeats itself. It only rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
And as a history of the National Socialists in Germany in that part of the period,
otherwise known as Nazis,
the Nazis, they talked about, historians talked about, I think the word is Gleichschaltung, and it means synchronization, and how the bureaucracy from the top down was infiltrated or purged of people that did not embrace the Nazi ideology. Boy, things seem to be going that way. You hear guys like Karl Rove talking about a permanent conservative Republican fit for 50 years controlling the United States through its Democratic.
Yeah, but Democrats were in charge for decades, and they weren't called Nazis for it. But we take.
I just want to say a few more things, and then I'll just make a statement, and then you can.
Let's hear it, Mitch. Give it to us.
This thing about synchronization, it seems like there's a purge with possible ideologues being put in the CI, which I agree with your guess, very scary situation. And also, I remember that the Holocaust started with a little meeting in the suburbs of Berlin, Wannsee.
Mitch, we've got it. We feel you're reaching there, but at the same time, you've got people right in the CIA that are concerned. Lee Strickland, let me put it to you. You spent a long time at the CIA. Is it possible with such a big agency, with so many staff members, with so many years of experience, to cow an entire agency?
Well, it certainly is possible to ignore it, and what I really fear is that the administration and the Defense Department really doesn't understand the history of the intelligence function in this country, that American intelligence was founded on a concept of impartiality, independence, truthfulness, rigorous academic analysis, and if you look back when General Donovan, back in the time of the OSS,
World War II,
he brings in William Langer, for example, who was the preeminent diplomatic historian in this country from Harvard, to provide the most rigorous analysis for President Roosevelt. And within a matter of months, it's on the desk of the president. And this is what we have to have. And I fear that, as our guest previously said, that reality is going to blow up in the face of the administration sooner or later.
I want to get another guest in here. Robert Baer is joining us right now from Silverton, Colorado. He's former CIA case officer, big in their operations in the Middle East, author of See No Evil, The True Story of a Ground Soldier in the CIA's War on Terrorism. Robert Baer, welcome back to One Point. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
I'm sure you've been watching with great interest as all this unfolds. How do you interpret what's going on here, Robert Baer? You know, we're hearing a politicization charge here. On the other hand, there were a lot of leaks from the CIA that might in any administration have upset the White House, which had an agenda that it wanted carried out.
Well, you know, there's two important issues. And the first one is that Porter Goss, when he was still at Congress, said the CIA is dysfunctional, and it is dysfunctional. It missed on September 11th. It got the weapons of mass destruction completely wrong. It relied on unreliable exiles, which is unforgivable in the intelligence business. Mm. It needs to be fixed. I personally wouldn't have picked Porter Goss simply because he's a congressman, because he's by nature political to reform the place. So what we basically have to do is see what he does in the next six months. If he sets about returning the CIA to what it was during the Cold War, when it did fairly well, I'll applaud him. But on the other hand, if he's simply been sent there to shut up dissent, we're in a lot of trouble.
What do you make of these early resignations as early indicators of what he intends to do?
I don't think they're particularly good, because the two, Sulik and the director of operations,
Kappus,
are very good officers. They had good reputations, and they left on principle, not because they were incompetent. Kappus was only in a couple of months, as well as Sulik. Both have a lot of experience overseas. We'll see who replaces them or who replaces the geographic division chiefs. That's extremely important, especially for the Middle East. So far, they haven't been changed. But the problem with Goss is he's got to go into that place, and he's being faced by an attitude of denial. I hate using that word, mm-hmm. but denied the CIA is broken. It denied that it made a mistake on Iraq. McLaughlin, the deputy, Lieutenant's deputy, who was acting director, simply denied that there was any problems. Once you start from that position, you can't ever correct course, and so Goss is facing that. But what really concerns me now is that the CIA is in complete disarray. Not as only is it dysfunctional, and Donald Rumsfeld is going to take advantage of this, and there's already winds of a takeover in Washington, where he's going to add operations to the Department of Defense, which I think would be a disaster.
Operations, that is, the clandestine
running
service
spies,
in effect.
Running spies and covert action. Covert action is hard enough as it is. The CIA hasn't done particularly well at it, but not for lack of trying. But if you move this over into the Pentagon, where there's no experience, you're doomed to fail.
John Diamond, let me ask you. You know both sides of that street pretty well. How do you see the Pentagon's intelligence star rising or falling as all this plays out at the CIA?
It seems to be rising at this point, and it's important to remember that the leaks which came out during the election season may have been timed more to the frenzied effort to get an intelligence reform bill through than with an effort to undermine the president. And I find it interesting that the leaks generally came from the intelligence analysis side rather than the operations side. So it's unclear to me why the operators, the people like Kappus and Sulik, are the ones being punished right now. But no question, Rumsfeld is consolidating power and has essentially succeeded in stopping the intelligence restructuring bill, for now anyway,
reform bill everybody's been waiting for.
Yes, the post 9/11, the 9/11 commission proposals, and at a time when President Bush, amazingly, was saying he was essentially for the outline of the bill as it existed on Capitol Hill, mainly the Senate version. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Meyer, sent a letter to the House side saying a lot of these things are not a good idea. And he was essentially saying we want intelligence to support the warfighter, that the intelligence community exists to support troops in the field. This is very much a mom and apple pie argument that's hard to oppose. And the House conservatives, who very much are aligned with the president and I think the neoconservative agenda, successfully used that. But it was an amazing circumstance where the general of the top general in the military appeared to be opposing his own president on this legislation. And it caused some to believe that perhaps the White House was only half-heartedly behind the intelligence reform.
John Diamond, Bob Baer, Lee Strickland, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Annapolis, Maryland tonight, James Woolsey, former director of the CIA, vice president now of Booz Allen Hamilton, a Washington consulting firm. James Woolsey, thanks for being with us tonight.
Good evening. Good evening.
to do it.
You have, of course, seen the uproar coming out of the CIA and the charges that there's a political purge underway at the CIA. On the other side, Republicans say we've got to clean house over there. You've been a pretty staunch supporter of President Bush. How do you see what's unfolding under Portagos at the agency?
I think there are three things going on. First is that Portagos has come in with an agenda to make some substantive changes, to rely somewhat less on liaison services, that is, foreign intelligence services that merely give information to the U.S., to have more aggressive and risk-taking case officers like Bob Baer. Although he hasn't said it explicitly, I think the implication is to move more toward non-official cover officers, that is, people who don't seem to be are not presented to the world as just U.S. government officials in the embassy from another agency, but rather are, in fact, appear to be perhaps not even Americans. It's a very risky way to operate. Other countries have done it more than we have, such as Russia, but it may be necessary. I'd really defer to Bob on this. It may be necessary in this world of the Middle East that we're in now. In general, though, I think Goss has talked about shaking things up and moving in a more aggressive and more less risk-averse direction. And there are some in the clandestine service that would oppose that, some that would probably support it. But that policy issue seems to me to be the heart of the matter. The rest of this is basically just kind of Washington stuff. Part of it is, who's spoke rudely first to whom and caused a resignation during an election year. Who first said it was the CIA's fault? No, it's the administration's fault that the estimates were off on the weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
Those issues are basically, I think, kind of Washington froth and will pass with the time. The important thing is whether Goss is right on the substantive reforms, and generally I think he probably is. And whether he can move the clandestine service and the director of operations into a position in support of those reforms.
Lee Strickland, I know I've only got you for another minute here. You've warned that there's politicization going on. James Woolsey says this is about an effort to bring substantive change to an agency that may well need it.
Well, change, yes. Improvement, yes. I've written about that. There's many things that need to be done. But this is not about rudeness. This is really about what I call an inept change, inept effort at change management. We're talking about infighting, which is really a division, a diversion from the critical mission that the agency has. And so while we need to make improvements, we have to realize that gutting the agency by losing career officials, what I call the best and the brightest, is really unacceptable. I mean, when you lose people like Mr. McLaughlin on the intelligence side, who is the quintessential expert, and when you lose the equivalent on the operational side, you're not talking about a little problem of rudeness or hurt feelings. You're talking about some significant losses, and when you put that in the context of statements that more is to come, it really is very worrisome that the talent pool is going to be seriously reduced.
Lee Strickland, 30-year veteran of the CIA, director of the Center for Information Policy at the University of Maryland, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Bob Baer, James Woolsey, John Diamond, please stand by. We're talking tonight about the shakeup at the CIA. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the shakeup, the meltdown, the turmoil at the CIA. You can join the conversation tonight. How can the public know if the CIA is being politicized or just whipped into shape? And what's the risk to the country of the turmoil in its top intelligence agency? We're at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined tonight by former director of the CIA, James Woolsey, by former CIA case officer, big CIA presence in the Middle East, Bob Baer, author of See No Evil, and John Diamond, who covers intelligence for USA Today, is with us as well. Right now, McKinley is calling from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Hi, McKinley. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a quick point. I served in military intelligence for 5 years. I was in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Okay.
And I think that perhaps what is happening here is them trying to, Porter Goss and the administration trying to shift the focus of the CIA more into this sort of war-fighting intelligence arena. And I really believe that that's the wrong way to go. The Pentagon, the Army, the Marine Corps, we all already have our own existing intelligence operations. They're not perfect. There's room for reform in there also, but they're in existence, and the CIA needs to look at overall strategic issues. And I think that any sort of an attempt to marginalize the CIA in one way or another, to move the mm-hmm. Department of Defense onto CIA ground is a bad thing.
And you're saying that as a former Army intelligence officer.
An Army intelligence non-commissioned officer. I was not commissioned, but I really believe that the CIA is doing its own thing that's separate in the Department of Defense, Army. We're doing our own things, and that's the way they need to stay.
And keep it that way. There's the vote from the Army Intel man. McKinley, thanks for your call. Bob Baer, what do you say to that? Do you see a push to merge these functions? Is the CIA being subsumed under the Pentagon's kind of agenda? Do you agree with our caller McKinley, who says keep these apart? They have different roles to play.
They have absolutely. I believe in an independent CIA. The military is too big. It's too politically important to give an independent, objective view on intelligence. I've seen that the CIA has lost power to the Pentagon for a long time. Under John Deutsch, we gave up satellites. A lot of our function became to help the military tactically. Force protection, the National Security Agency is under the Pentagon, does not give all of its information. And if this trend continues, we're not going to have an independent view on the world. And I think it would be a mistake, for sure.
James Woolsey, how do you see that issue? Do you see the CIA losing its independence? And what are the stakes there?
Well, the CIA ought to have a worldwide and national focus. And for human intelligence and the all-source analysis that it does for the major national issues, it shouldn't be focused just specifically on military issues. But I must say that I think that the role of NSA and the National Reconnaissance Office and the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency,
yep.
which are essentially the photo interpreters and map makers,
mm-hmm.
I think that the situation has worked reasonably well for the course of the last number of years, in which the product of those technical agencies has been utilized very effectively on the battlefield by the military, and part of that has had to do with the Secretary of Defense's role in intelligence. I don't think the Secretary of Defense and the Director of Central Intelligence need to be adversaries on this. I worked with both Les Aspin and Bill Perry, who were the Secretaries of Defense when I was DCI, and we had a very cordial relationship, and we just worked things out. The only time I know of where there's really been rather substantial tension between the DCI and the Secretary of Defense was back in the Carter administration between Stan Turner and Harold Brown.
Right.
I don't think the Defense Department is the main problem. I do support having a National Intelligence Director, but along the lines really of Congresswoman Jane Harman's original bill, because I think its main purpose there was to coordinate between domestic intelligence and foreign intelligence on this transnational phenomenon
right.
of terrorism. Mm. And I think there is a need to pull that together. But I think the working relationships for the National Security Agency and the National Reconnaissance Office and NGA and so forth with the CIA have not worked badly, and I don't think that ought to be the main focus of the reforms.
Of course, Jane Harman, a Democrat from California, pretty worried right now, saying the agency seems in free fall. John Diamond, I hear you there.
Just wanted to quickly throw in one thought that in a time of war, an argument was being made now, for example, by Congressman Duncan Hunter, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, that intelligence must support the warfighter. It's a compelling argument, hard to argue against it. But really, the main point of the CIA, it seems to me, historically, has been to keep the nations out of war. And one of the primary arguments about 9/11 in Iraq is that if the CIA had done a better job, perhaps these wars wouldn't be going on in the first place.
So
the agency
is
fanciful, says James Woolsey.
I don't think the CIA should or does have a policy position on whether the United States ought to use military force or not use military
that's
force.
Not my, that's not my point.
Period.
I'm not saying it's a policy position. I'm saying that if a more accurate assessment of WMD, mm-hmm. perhaps there wouldn't have been a compelling case for invasion. If there had been a better intelligence handling of Al-Qaeda, perhaps 9/11 doesn't happen. This is the mm-hmm. argument that's out there.
I think
the idea is that the CIA...
Well, what fanciful that we shouldn't expect a better assessment of WMD? It looks pretty flawed in retrospect.
Fanciful that if there had been some kind of different assessment, 9/11 would not have occurred. I don't see how anybody could argue that with a straight face.
John saying on the war with Iraq, if there had been a clearer, more accurate portrayal of what was up with WMD, there might not have been the case for that war.
Well, if George Tenet had had a dozen Iraqi generals as assets, as informants, as spies, from what we know now from the UN inspectors and the CIA studies and Mr. Kay and the others, they would have all said the same thing, which is that, no, I didn't have chemical weapons in my unit, but the one to my left and the one to my right did. Israeli intelligence, French intelligence, Russian intelligence, everybody thought that Saddam not only had the capability to produce, but also had some stockpiles of chemical and bacteriological weapons.
Still, the fact is that we got it wrong.
I think that the people who were on the other side of that argument had been discredited by the fact that they had missed his nuclear weapons programs back in the 80s. He had three of them. Had missed the biological weapons program. Which,
we know those arguments, and we've been there, and yet there's some chagrin that we ended up getting it wrong. Bob Baer, I want to get you in here once more. As American citizens listening tonight, on the one hand, the charge that the agency is being politicized. On the other hand, people saying, but there are changes that need to be made here. How does the citizenry judge whether what's going on at the CIA is the right thing or not?
It's almost impossible for a citizen to know. And, you know, I think Mike Scheuer's done a disservice by coming out while an employee complaining about the administration and policy.
Mr. Anonymous on 60 Minutes this Sunday, yeah.
Yes, I mean, I agree with a lot of his positions, but you can't have CIA employees coming out and writing books. It's very difficult for the average citizen to figure out what's going on. And this really has to be handled internally. And I think with Portergas in there, we're just going to have to defer to him for 6 months to get this place straight, make it less aggressive, put spies out there, hire people we weren't allowed to hire in the past because of the old Soviet rules. And it's going to take a while. It's going to take a couple of years to adjust to this new threat. And we're just going to have to live with that. And if the CIA is demoralized for a year or two, that's just too bad.
And James Woolsey, we've just got 30 seconds here, but how about this concern that there's a political purge going on? How can the public feel confident that that's not happening?
I think it's nonsense. I agree with Bob Baer. Indeed, I would have loved it if Porter Goss had brought Bob back in some senior position. He has had the history of aggressiveness and risk-taking of the sort that we need in the intelligence community, and I think that... the fact that two senior director of operations officers have resigned because of personality conflicts with some people that Goss has brought in is a matter of secondary importance. John McLaughlin didn't resign over that. He told me yesterday he'd been planning to resign after the election for some substantial period of time.
And yet we're warned that there may be a lot more turmoil to come by Porter Goss himself. With that, I'm afraid we're out of time. James Woolsey, former director of the CIA, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Good to be with you.
Bob Baer, always great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us from Colorado tonight.
Thank you very much.
Robert Baer, author of See No Evil, and John Diamond, you're a great sport, and we appreciate your being on tonight. Thanks so much for your good guidance.
You're welcome, Tom.
John Diamond covers intelligence for USA Today. Bob Baer served in the Middle East in the CIA Directorate of Operations for 20 years. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. In a moment, Senate Democrats elect a new leader. This is On Point. Democrats elected their new U.S. Senate leader today, choosing Nevada Senator Harry Reid to replace Tom Daschle, who lost his re-election bid in South Dakota on November 2nd. Reid is known as a quiet consensus builder, more adept at pulling strings behind the scenes than at holding a press conference. But today, Reid promised he won't compromise on important issues.
I'm always would rather dance than fight, but I know how to fight.
Reid is to the right of many of his Democratic colleagues, a Mormon who opposes abortion and has disagreed with Democrats on other key issues. He now becomes one of the most powerful figures in a party defining its way forward after election setbacks. Gail Chadwick covers Capitol Hill for the Christian Science Monitor. She joins me now. Gail, thanks for being with us tonight.
Glad to be here.
Here's an interesting selection of Harry Reid, much more conservative than a lot of his colleagues. How do you interpret the Democrats' choice as Senate leader?
A very natural one. Democrats have not yet had a debate they're going to have at some point about who is to blame for the losses in the Senate and nationwide and what to do about it. But in the interim, I think they would be hard-pressed to find anyone better than Harry Reid. He is a very skilled legislator. Senator Daschle called him today the best legislative mind he's encountered in all his years in the Senate. And there are many Republicans who would agree with that assessment as well.
So have they chosen Harry Reid because he's a more conservative profile? Is this a response to November 2nd, or is it primarily because he's so adept in the halls of the Senate?
I think he's been Daschle's number two for 8 years. He is probably more present on the floor of the Senate than any other senator by far. He's there. He's in place. He knows what he's doing. And there's no one else who is prepared to really challenge him at this point. I suspect that may come down the line because there is, in this media age, such an emphasis on who can really excite a crowd. I don't think Harry Reid has ever excited a crowd, but he has tremendous respect and trust on both sides of the aisle. Remember, he's the one that talked Senator Jeffords into switching parties, turning control over to the Democrats back in 2001.
Quite a key moment.
Very key moment.
He's outside the Democrat mainstream in his opposition to abortion. Where else does he strike a different note?
He also was one of the few Democrats who voted for the Gulf War. First Gulf War, and also supported use of force when Senator Daschle opposed it. So he's on issues. He's certainly more of a centrist. But the quality, you know, when you talk to Democrats coming back today about what they learned from the election, many of them are using the same term. We need people to understand our roots. It may not be that we share the same faith that they do. It may not be that we talk about God the way Republicans do, but people need to understand our roots. And there's no one with deeper roots in rural America than Harry Reid, who grew up in a mining town with a few hundred people. His father was a, you know, hard rock miner. His mother took in laundry, and his college education was paid for by businessmen in, you know, a nearby town. He really pulled himself up. And his comment today, I think, is something he'll come back to again and again. He said that when people ask what's the vision that our leadership team has for the country, we want people to have the same opportunities that Harry Reid had. He will really play that roots card.
And Gail, let me ask you, Tom Daschle was criticized, branded by the Republicans as an obstructionist. Harry Reid, a bit more conservative, is he more likely to reach across the aisle to look for a compromise with the Republicans, or to be, fighting the Democrat fight stridently?
Harry Reid was a boxer, as he said in the excerpt you read. There is no one, I would even say more than Daschle, who can win a fight on the floor. There was a wonderful moment back in November 2003 when Republicans were trying to get a bill through and they were going to start a 30-hour anti-filibuster. It was all carefully choreographed 24 hours a day. And Harry Reid stood up on a Monday morning and did something absolutely no one expected. He gave a real filibuster. It lasted 8.5 hours, and he just never sat down, never stopped talking, and he brought the floor to a halt.
So this is a man who knows how to do it. Gail Chadwick with the Christian Science Monitor, thanks so much for being with us from Washington tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.